Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Sports Conversation. This is, of course, on the Fighting Network. I'm Don Henderson, our co-host along the way. Of course, Roy Cummings in Tampa, Florida. Roger Hendler in Atlanta, Georgia. Our commander-in-chief behind all the microphones and running the controls for us, Frank Carroll. He'll join us in just a second. And before we get everything started, let me throw it right to Frank for a dedication, and then we'll jump right into the show. Frank?
Yeah, Don, unfortunately, we are starting the week again with eight police officers across the country have lost their lives in the line of duty. Ladies and gentlemen, these are very, very tough times for men and women in uniform. Please, if you're out there and you see somebody in uniform, you can shake their hand, give them a wink, let them know you know they're there and you know that they're doing a good job. Not everybody is as bad as some of the people think they are. There's an awful lot of good guys out there trying to do their job, and all they want to do is go home to their children and their wife each and every night. So if you could, during the week or during the day at some point in time, just give them a good thought or a prayer if you could. We appreciate it.
All right, Frank, we'll jump right into it. Reverse the order a little bit. Normally we start with Roy Cummings because he's our genuine guest every night between 7:30 and 8 o'clock. But, Roger, we're going to start with you because the New York Mets came in very, very depleted into the world champion Braves' backyard, and Buck Showalter and company took the Braves 2 out of 3 and sort of slowed down that momentum in Atlanta.
Well, they sure did, Don, and I was hoping to talk to Roy. I guess we'll get to talk to him about it. One of the things that surprised me today, you know, I'm a big Charlie Morton fan. And when I looked at, you know, that score today, 7-3, but I looked at his ERA, 4.45. I never paid any attention to it until today. And, you know, when you think about it, as successful as he's been, that's a high earned run average. And but I think the Braves will be back. I give the Mets a lot of credit. I really do. They've got a lot of talent. And you know, since we're on baseball, I have to say a couple of things about the Phillies. Number one, the colors have really shown with the guys that we did not know until now with when they went to Toronto that have not been vaccinated. One is Realmuto. I'm never happy about that contract for 5 years for a 30-year-old catcher, and he's not had a good year. He's had a couple of good highlights. That's about it. And the statement that he made, it's going to be interesting to see the response he gets at the next home game at Citizens Bank Park. When he talked about not getting the vaccination, he said, oh, I told my doctor what I felt about it, and so I decided not to get it. And, you know, what's the pay for a couple of games? Well, that pay is $235,000. And if, none of us can relate to getting 2 days' pay for $235,000. If that was not an asinine statement to make by a bright guy, nothing is.
Well, I'll let Roy jump in and comment on that. I have to disagree with you in one regard. Everybody knew in the front office, from the managers to the coaches to everybody in the front office, that there were players that did not get their shots and would not be able to go and participate once they went over the border.
No. That's my point, Don. The fans didn't know until
Wait a minute. Billy and I did a show last week in Philadelphia. We talked about it, that these were the players that were not inoculated and would not be eligible to play in Toronto. They knew about it. Everybody in Philadelphia knew that they were not eligible to play. But let me get to Roy and get some of his comments first. Go ahead, Roy.
Yeah, I can see both sides of the argument with Realmuto. It's unfortunate that he's not there for his team, and I think it is a bit of a slap in the face of the fan base and the organization as well, that you just kind of, you know, lackadaisically say, oh, well, what's a couple of days? You know, maybe to him it's nothing. But the team needs him, especially at this time, you know, where – you got two teams at the top of the division fighting it out against each other, and it's an opportunity to gain some ground. You know, you don't know where you're going to be in certain situations throughout the season. Here they are without Bryce Harper. And when you take Realmuto out of the lineup, who's been playing a little bit better of late, you know, that hurts you. And, you know, you could argue that, okay, well, he had a couple of days coming off anyway. Maybe he was going to get a day off in one of those games. But, you know, usually a day off means you could still pinch hit or something. It just, again, it hurts the team, and I think it's just a little bit disrespectful of the fans that, you know, that you don't get the vaccination. I think from the Phillies' standpoint, they were probably hoping that at some point he would go ahead and get it. I'm sure they were urging him to do it, urging him, not pressuring him, but urging him to do it, maybe even getting some teammates to say, hey, we're going to need you there. You know, get the shot, do what's best for the team. But at the end of the day, these are individual decisions, and it's controversial every time. If a player doesn't get the shot and can't go across the border to play, it matters. And it matters not just, you know, with the Phillies. It matters with other teams in Major League Baseball. It matters in hockey as well, and mattered in basketball. So, you know, we've seen this happen. You know what the rules are. It's just a little unfortunate that a player that, again, to Roger's point, that you gave a big contract to, that you look at as a leader of the team, basically doesn't take a leadership role here. And to me, that's disappointing. You know, we see it all the time. Teams miss the playoffs or make the playoffs in some cases by a game, two games. You know, what would JT Realmuto mean to Philly across the border in these couple of games? He might mean the difference between making the playoffs and not. You know, that East is tough, and a lot of people think that three teams could come out of there and get to the playoffs. A lot of people think the Phillies could be one of them, but they got a lot of work to do, and it doesn't help them if JT Realmuto is not in the lineup.
Well, they had a great chance, so they lost the last two games. They won the first two games against the Cardinals and then dropped the next two. And then, of course, went into Toronto and lost again. But, Roger, going back to your point, they also lost Baum last night sliding into second base. I don't know. I have not seen the medical report on it yet. On the postgame show, they were very, very pessimistic about what had happened to him with his hand. Maybe you know more about that than I do because I don't.
He broke his finger. It was the night before last. It was Monday night against the Cardinals. And he, too, is not vaccinated. Okay, it's not only Realmuto. There's several players.
That's
but
right.
Schwarber, if you heard the interview with Kyle Schwarber, okay, he really, you can sense he's not happy with those guys that they have not gotten it, and you know, and he's a leader, and I think this could also now surface and cause some dissension within the ranks in the clubhouse. I really believe that after hearing Schwarber.
Roger, I think you're right. And the more we look at it, you know, think of it this way. Let's just say that the Phillies get hot, that they get into the playoffs, and that they get hot at the right time, and they get to the World Series, and lo and behold, they're playing the Toronto Blue Jays. And the laws and rules for entry into the country in Canada haven't changed. You know, are the Phillies, what are they going to do? Are they going to go into Philadelphia without JT Realmuto, without Alec Baum? I mean, two of their most important players? I mean, they're starters. You know, we're not talking about, you know, young players that have a part-time job here. You know, we're talking about guys that have a legitimate role, and the team counts on them. It's really disappointing is what it is. And what it says to me is, you know, it goes a little bit towards what I think we've known about the Phillies for a while now, is that they're not all in. I mean, they're not all in on this thing. Is everybody doing everything they can to, you know, as a team to make this work, to get to the playoffs and to win a championship? It seems to me that the answer is no. There's some guys who are, you know, all in, and some guys who are, well, I got one foot in, but I can't put both feet in. It's really disappointing.
Well, in those four games, Roy, against the Cardinals, they only scored, I believe, 7 runs. So they were lucky to get the first two because the Cardinals weren't hitting. And now, it's nothing-nothing in the third inning. And Zach Wheeler's pitching another classic. And you talk about a guy that was really given the cold shoulder about the All-Star game. That's Zach Wheeler. He should be there.
Right, you're exactly right there. Toronto just scored a run on a ground ball to second or to a shortstop. They couldn't convert a double play. So Toronto's up by a score of 1-0. But going back to your point, Roy, and to Roger, we've now gone through this in the football season and the basketball season. The two superstars for the Brooklyn Nets weren't able to participate because they couldn't play in the arena. Couldn't go to Madison Square Garden if you were a Knick. You couldn't go with some of the other arenas. I'm talking superstars, guys who are making, what, $10, $15 million a year, wouldn't play. And this is just another carryover. Somewhere along the line, I would think that the Players Association or the owners in with the Players Association had to make some kind of a ruling that these guys can't just sit out. I mean, it doesn't make any sense.
Well, I hear your point there, Don, and I agree with it to a point, but at the end of the day, you know, the Players Association is going to look out for the players and their individual rights. I mean, that's what they're going to look out for. And, And again, you know what? Each player, just as every individual, you know, no matter where, what industry you're in, they have a right to make these decisions regarding their health and their body, you know, as we all should. But, you know, when it comes to sports and you're on a team, it's a little bit different. You know, if you sell insurance and you don't want to get the vaccine and your company says, all right, you're going to have to try to, you know, cold call from home and make it on the phone and you can't go make visits, you know, okay, maybe you'll feel the pinch. But when you play for a team, you know, in Major League Sports, I just think there's a different – it's a different dynamic. You've got, you know, a group of other guys, whether it's, you know, 52 on a football team, 24 on a baseball team, you know, 18 or 20 on a hockey team, a dozen on a basketball team. You got other guys counting on you. And I think it just, to me, it takes an awful lot of guts, I'll say, to basically turn your back on your teammates and say, sorry, guys, can't be there for you when if you need me in, you know, in Toronto. I just think it's wrong. And, you know, I think that's how divisions and fissures in locker rooms, dressing rooms, and clubhouses begin. And it wouldn't surprise me at all. I mean, look, Roger, you've obviously, you know, had your say about JT Realmuto, and there's some catchers out there, one in Chicago in particular, who could be on the market. Phillies would look really nice with Wilson Contreras behind the plate.
Sure.
Might be time to move on. And you know what? Alec Baum is, you know, he's having a nice season, but it's not like he's a fixture. And we're not talking about Brooks Robinson here. We're not talking about Nolan Arenado. We're talking about a guy who's expendable. And
in the Phillies case, Baum has really been one of their much better players over the last month to 5 weeks.
I agree.
Not only defensively, but offensively. But going back to you, Roger, I mean, here they are in a head-to-head battle with the Cardinals and other teams to try to get into the playoffs. And now you go to Toronto, and you leave your guys out there hanging out to dry.
Well, I agree. I mean, and, you know, like I said, it's not only those two fellas. I mean, it's several other players. But, you know, with the point of about the NFL, you know, that we have to consider is they never have to go to Canada, okay? But they have to go out of the country, and there's more and more games. This year it's in Germany plus England, I believe, right? In Munich? I think it's in Munich, isn't it?
There's almost a dozen games outside of the country this year, so that's an issue as well.
You know, Roy, I brought it up to Frank just to switch over to football for even if a second. You probably got it. I just got the announcement from the NFL this afternoon that Troy Vincent and the gentleman that's involved with international football are going to team up to make the presentation to the Olympic Committee to have flag football in the Olympics. I'd like to have your comment on that. I think it's very interesting, and boy, wouldn't it be something if they approve that?
Look, I'm all in favor of it. You know, I am a traditionalist in just about every, you know, form of, you know, sports when it comes to that. I do like and appreciate, you know, the sports in the Olympics that we've kind of become accustomed to seeing. But I don't mind new sports coming in. I don't mind that tennis and golf are part of the Olympics. I don't mind that softball is part of the Olympics. And if flag football is going to be part of it, why not? I don't know how much it's played outside the U.S., but my guess is it's probably a growing sport because, you know, it's a fun activity. And I would think that it's an opportunity, again, to get, you know, more athletes involved, and it could be a men's and women's division as well. I think it's a great idea. I don't know if, you know, you might see some ex-NFL players. I can't imagine the NFL is going to ask those guys to go out there and play in the Olympics, but you never know. That could happen too. So I'm all in favor of it. I think it'd be great. It will be fun to watch.
Well, Roger, since you brought up football, it looks like Dan Snyder is finally going to have to make an appearance before they finally have made the decision that, yes, indeed, he's got to step up and he's got to make an appearance. What do you think about that?
Go ahead, Roy.
Yeah, well, first of all, he darn well should make an appearance. He's panned here. police. It's an awful issue. Talk about turning your back on your people. I mean, this has been, it went on, the situation that they're concerned about here with the female staff members has been going on for years there. And in a male-dominated sport, a male-dominated environment, these people some people became like predators, and he has to answer to it. I don't think he's the only organization. You know, the Washington is the only organization that's probably got problems like this. There's probably others, but clearly, if this is at least the tip of the iceberg, if not the whole iceberg. But he should have to answer for it. And, you know, I don't think it's going to go well for him. I really don't. I don't know what powers can be, you know, put in place here to force him out, if that's, you know, what needs to be done or whatever. But I just don't think it's going to go well for him. Will he still own the team at the end of the day? That's possible. But I think at some point, I think other owners are going to have to be a little bit more aggressive and say, all right, look, if you want to be part of this club, this can't go on. The only reason they wouldn't, I would think, as if they're all guilty of the same thing in some form or fashion.
Exactly. Yeah.
Roger?
Oh, I totally agree. Yeah, I totally agree. And, you know, what's really sad is that, you know, that was a prestige organization when he bought it. And, you know, a great tradition. And I used to spend a lot of time not only in the reserves, but also for work down in D.C. and Virginia. And this, you're right, Roy, this goes back, what, 25, 30 years now almost. And when he really has taken that organization to a low level, I mean, when they remove seats and they cover up seats to make it look better, it's a sad situation about that. And Don and I, we were even at a game at RFK, right, Don, before they moved to FedEx Field.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, let's switch again. Got a couple of things I want to touch on before we get that run out of time with Roy, and that is Scotty Bowman. Scotty is stepping aside, our neighbor down there in right outside of Sarasota, and it's been a long time, you know, with the same organization now, and he decided it was time to step aside. Roy?
Yeah, hey, boy, nobody's given it a better run than Scotty Bowman. You could certainly say that. He's a fixture at the Tampa Bay Lightning games in his role as a scout and kind of an advanced scout for the teams. And you know what? He just loves the sport. You can see. I mean, it's great to be able to sit and talk to him and pick his brain. And I mean, he's got so much knowledge about the game and so many stories to tell. He's a great ambassador for the game, and he's done a great job for years. I'm surprised he really stuck around this long, but you know what? His love for the game is that great that he makes that drive up from Pinellas, deep in Pinellas County, Sarasota County, I should say, and every night that the Lightning are playing, he's there. It's very rare that he's not, and he's been great
for
the sport.
He lives on Siesta, which is great because it's very close to us in Sarasota, just the other end of the beach. But you're right. I mean, he was a great guest when he was with us. Every time he's been with us, as you said, a great lover of the National Hockey League and a great storyteller for all the teams and all the championships. And you can put him up as maybe one of the greatest coaches of all time because not only winning on the hockey front, but also winning with different organizations at different times, which is almost unbelievable, Roy.
Yeah, I think he's the greatest coach of all time. I really do. And the numbers back that up, and what he did with so many, as you said, so many organizations, he won with Diamond. You know, he took over the Penguins when they were just kind of wallowing. You know, they weren't special. He did the same with the Sabres. He certainly did with Montreal. He won everywhere he went, and he didn't just win on the ice. I mean, he built organizations. He was the backbone. I mean, he was the mastermind behind it all. And most of those organizations, I mean, obviously Buffalo has fallen off a little bit, but you know, I think Pittsburgh still, you know, succeeds as a result of the foundation that was laid in part by Scotty Bowman. I think he just think he has an expectation of how things are supposed to be done. And I think if you listen to him and learn from him, and you follow his lead, you'll put together a winning organization, you know, year in and year out. Obviously, they've done that in Pittsburgh. He started that. They've done it in Montreal. You know, they've fallen on some hard times, obviously, in the last couple of years. But injuries and other things have something to do with that. Let's not forget there. But as I said, Buffalo, I think, is the exception. But Scotty Bowman is he is NHL royalty. No doubt about it.
Wasn't he the original coach for the St. Louis Blues when the new six came in, the Flyers, et cetera?
You're absolutely right. And so again, I mean, that's just another example of, you know, at a time when, you know, granted, he was only up against the other expansion teams to get there, but he got to the Stanley Cup Finals and, you know, loses basically as a result of one of the greatest goals of all time, but still in one of the greatest teams of all time, Boston Bruins. But, yeah, he was the coach. And, again, that's another example of a team that he built into a champion. And it's what he did. He built champions is what he did. And
no question. You can't
say that about too many people.
Well, before we leave hockey, one last thing for everybody, and that is that tomorrow free agency at noontime, noontime today, the Lightning got to the finals again but came short in six games. Rangers look as though they could lose as many as six players to free agency. The Lightning or the Jersey Devils are in the same position, very much up against the cap. How about the Lightning? What are they? Have they got any moves on the drawing board?
Well, as you noted, free agency started today at noon, and it's been going strong ever since. And the Lightning are in a bit of a tough situation. They're probably going to lose more than they gain. They did re-sign some of their most critical players. Mikhail Sergachev was re-signed. Eric Chernak was re-signed. They cannot re-sign Andre Palat. That's going to hurt them. Anthony Cirelli was re-signed. So that's the good news. They did pick up another defenseman, Cole Irvin, who's been around to a couple of teams, but a good solid defenseman, defensive-oriented. He helps them retain or get back some of the defense that they've lost. Jan Ruda is gone, but the biggest loss is going to be Andre Palat. They had to let him know today that they just can't fit him in under the cap, so we'll see where he ends up going. Former Flyer Claude Giroux, now with the Ottawa Senators of all teams, quite interesting where he's gone from Florida, so it's all happening out there. Oscar Lindblom is gone from the Flyers. He's going to San Jose. You know, you got a new situation there and a new coach, obviously, with John Tortorella in Philadelphia, anxious to see how he builds. It looks like he's building toughness and defense. That's what he's the focus seems to be on in Philadelphia right now, focus defense and toughness.
Roger? We didn't get a chance to talk to you, Roy, for the last couple of weeks about the John Tort coming to Philadelphia. Everybody's pretty excited about it.
Yeah, I think they should be. Look, I think John Tortorella is a guy that you bring in if you think you're right there. And so I'm not sure he's the guy that you want to build your team. I think he's more of a finisher. But you usually, you know, bring in young players. He's tough with young guys. Young guys don't necessarily get the message that John Tortorella delivers, unless you're a specific kind. You got to be a certain kind of guy to hear that message, you know, understand the message, understand what it is he's asking for you. He's more of the kind of coach that does better with veterans, but if you get enough veterans around him and they can bring the other kids in, he'll make you a winner. I still think John Tortorella is one of the best coaches in the game. Look, I don't think Philadelphia's been hurt by coaching. But I do think they've gotten a little bit better every year in terms of what they've tried to put behind the bench. I think this is the best they've had in the last 3, 4, 5 years. I think it'll work out well for them. I'm anxious to see how it works out. But be ready for some controversy because John Tortorella pulls no punches.
Well, I agree with you from the standpoint of defense because he believes in defense. A lot of the great coaches do, and, you know, he has his difficulty after 2 or 3 years, but he's a lightning force to start things off. And actually, he lasted longer with the Lightning than many people thought he was going to. Having won the Stanley Cup, he lasted a little bit longer. But you're right. His approach is only goes one way.
Yeah, and if you're not, and if you don't buy in, you'll be gone. It's that simple. He'll weed some guys out, but if they get weeded out, it's just because they didn't understand that it's a 200-foot sheet of ice, and you got to play all 200 feet for John Tortorella. If you don't, you won't be a part of the team.
Roger,
they need that. That's what the Flyers need. By the way, the Phillies, Toronto's got a no-hitter going, and in the fourth inning,
Yeah.
So, what does that say?
I think Constantine just hit a ball off the right field wall. He's on second base. I believe he got a double.
Oh, okay, good. That just happened, right? See, you're ahead of the game, Don, because you're watching the game. I can't get it. So, what I'm doing is I'm on the game day.
Well, Schwarber has hit a real high fly ball to right field. That's going to end the inning. So the Phillies are not going to capitalize on the double. They're still down 1-0. And but
at least
again,
they got a hit.
They got a hit, but they keep striking out, Roger. I mean, you had another, 13, 14 strikeouts?
15 last night. 15.
Yeah, you can't have that. I mean, they had 8. You only got 27 outs in the game. I don't know what these people count up. You know, these guys with all these statistics and everything, 27 outs in a game, they strike out 18 times. You don't have very many chances to get anybody on base.
No, not at all. You
Roy,
know,
what about Roy, what
about
the
about
we haven't
so
really talked
times.
At all about Tampa Bay. You know, they've had a lot of injuries too, and Cash is, I guess, trying everything he can to get them, keep them in the at least keep them in the hunt.
Yeah, he is, and you're right. Look, every team in baseball has been hit by injuries. It's not exclusive to one or two teams. The Rays have been hit by it as badly as anybody. But yeah, he is. I think he's doing a good job of keeping it close or keeping them close. They'll get some guys back here eventually, but they just lost Wander Franco, which is really a tough loss. They're going to be out without him for maybe as much as 2 months. So they've got to try to.
Is the wrist is what it was?
Yeah, exactly. He's got he broke a bone in his wrist or in a hamate bone, and actually the news is good, I would say, because Fernando Tatis ended up with a wrist injury as well, and he still isn't back. So it could have been a lot worse, but hey, you're right. A lot of teams struggling with injuries. Some people still think it goes back to the fact that just the layoff at the beginning of the season, guys trying to rush to get themselves in shape, not in shape enough. Who knows? But it's been tough for a lot of teams, and yeah, the Rays are one of them. And we'll see how it goes. At some point, I think everybody's going to deal with it. Although the Yankees seem to be immune from it at this point, although it might change.
Roger?
No, I agree. And they have been very fortunate, but. They're just a good team, and I'll tell you, to see Judge play, I'm a fan. I mean, he's a class act. I think that he brings so much that's needed in baseball. They talked about Mike Trout not promoting himself. Remember that a couple years ago? Hey, listen, baseball needs to do a better job of marketing. There's no doubt about it. But some of these young players, I think, really give them an opportunity to do a big improvement in marketing.
Roy, I don't know if they followed it in Florida as closely as the New York Post, but Grun had a big story in the New York Post today that no matter what Tom decides and how well he does during the course of the year, that there is no way that he's coming back to play football in 2022. I don't know whether that article was featured across the country or not, but he's been pretty emphatic. He doesn't care what they say or how they talk to him or whoever comes to talk to him. He's not going to play.
Are you talking about Rob Gronkowski?
Yeah.
No, I believe that. I mean, Tom Brady obviously had something kind of cooked up there to go to Miami, and I think that's the reason he sort of retired. back when that didn't work out. But I think Rob Gronkowski fortunate to years out of his body, and he came out of it pretty healthy. And I think he realizes now that the likelihood of him doing that if he plays yet another is probably pretty slim. I mean, just the way he plays, obviously, he's a target. He takes everything he's got. Fun for a couple of years, and I think he realizes that the chances of the Bucs winning another Super Bowl are probably kind of, well, they're not slim, but he probably realizes that with some of the changes that have been made, they're probably not going to be quite as good. And look, I think he made the same career. He's arguably the best tight end in the history of the game, and he had a lot of fun, and he did it the right way, and played at a high level on a consistent basis. So as long as his body would let him. He's been through a lot.
Wheeler just gave up a home run over the center field fence. Roger, there's now 2-0 Toronto. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I'll leave you guys with this. The fans who followed him were blessed to have watched Rob Gronkowski play. He was, he's best in the position ever, and I don't think it'll be a long time before we see somebody like him again. I'm not saying one won't come along. Someone probably will, but boy, oh boy, he was fun in every way, that's for sure.
And it'll still
be
covered
the whole scope tonight. Once again, thank you very, very much. It's always a pleasure, and we'll get together again next week, and we'll have a whole new sheet of evidence to go to.
Works
have
for
a great
me, guys.
Week, Roy. Thanks for having me.
Thank
as
you.
Always.
Take care. Thank
okay,
you.
Okay, we got Mike Cole ready to go now, and we're going to talk a little golf because the U.S. Open, the 100, or not the U.S., the British Open. They don't call it the British Open anymore. They call it just the Open. And that gets underway tomorrow, early in the morning. So we got Mike Cole on the line right now. And
no, he's not
Frank,
on yet.
Oh, Mike's
Mike
not
is,
with us?
Mike got tied up. He asked for a few minutes, so he's running late.
Oh, well.
He's still on the PCC.
Okay. Oh, it looks like that Toronto just hit another home. Looks like Toronto just hit another home, right? Oh, maybe it's
3-0. Okay. The bottom line is that the Phillies are a very inconsistent team. They had that good run. I thought that they would be playing much better at the beginning of the season. I thought that they would be in much better shape now than they are.
4-0 now, Roger.
4-0. Okay.
Yeah, Guerrero Jr. hit one, and then it looks like Hernandez just hit this one. Over the right center field, hit the top of the right center field wall, and went over.
Yeah.
So it's 4-0 Toronto right now.
And that's with Wheeler on the mound. Okay,
yes.
So what does that tell you? But, you know, Castellanos, you know, I think that was a ridiculous contract. He hasn't hit. I don't want to hear this nonsense, Don. About he's pressing too much to prove his value. I don't want to hear
right.
that. The guy's getting paid a lot of money to play and to hit. That's why they got him. Not to be for defense, to be adequate. And I looked at that box score tonight, and it is a joke. As
my good
Montel
on speaker
say, huh?
Am I good on speaker?
You're on?
Cheers. We'll come back to the Phillies, Roger, because right now they're really in some trouble. But so once again, we'll chat. It's going to be Mike Cole that's joining us next, director of
Rick
golf.
Peckham. No, Rick Peckham.
Oh, now we got it. Okay, you got. Oh, Jesus. Okay, now we're going to go back to hockey. We got Rich Beckham is going to join us right now, the National Hockey League All-Star. Report and also talk about the draft today or the free agency today. And so, Rick, first of all, thank you very, very much for joining us. And we're sort of jumping the order of guests a little bit back and forth. So thank you very much, Rick. We appreciate it.
My pleasure. And if anything you want to throw at me from the world of golf, I'll be happy to try to work with that too. I'm like you guys. I can't wait for the British Open to start.
Oh boy, I'll tell you. We've got two golf aficionados coming on with us later on in the program. And since you're right on top of what's happening in the world of hockey, As I say, with the free agency today and all the things that are happening today for players moving around and teams that are in a real cap situation, your overview, first of all, before we let's start with the team right there in Tampa. We just had Roy Cummings on. What about their needs, or what about the players they're going to lose?
Well, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. I mean, just from a fan perspective, I don't have anybody I'm calling inside the organization to find out, you know, the situation with some of the free agents that they could sign, like Palat. I'm not sure what happened with him. But just looking at the Sergachev signing, I think that's the one that jumps out at a lot of people, I'm sure, because they're making a mammoth investment in him. And, you know, we saw some really good signs from him in the finals against Colorado, where you watch him over the years, and he's got all the physical tools. We know that. He can skate. He can pass, shoot. The shot's very good. He's big and strong. But he kind of leaves you with the feeling like, come on, there's something more there. We need a little more of this. We need a little more of that. And I think it's more the mental aspect of his game that's got to mature, and they're obviously investing on that happening. He's got the skills to be a top-flight defenseman in this league, but it's between the ears, I think, and the confidence, I think, more than anything else, that he can do the job and on a consistent basis. But a huge signing there, and I think a big commitment to a couple other guys who, have been big contributors, although, you know, they've been complimentary guys, and Anthony Cirelli, who you got to watch him game in, game out to really appreciate what he brings to the team, and Eric Chernak. I mean, the block shots with Chernak playing Hurts, matchup defenseman who's tough to deal with for left wingers as he's playing the right defensive spot. And Cirelli just matching up. I think he did an excellent job in a matchup against McKinnon in the finals, and one of many matchups that he and Alex Killorn and Brandon Hagel drew throughout the playoffs. So you lock down a guy like that, and as it's been mentioned by a lot of people, you know, that Selke Award that goes to the top defensive forward in the NHL, that could be his a couple of times in the stretch of this big contract he signed.
Roger?
You know, Rick, I was just looking at a lot of the free agents that the Flyers have signed. It's amazing, like five are going to be depth players, but they're all in the $750,000 a year, and they can, you know, be a one-way or two-way as far as the setup goes. But the one that they got was signed a four-year contract, Nicholas Deslauriers. I think that's how you pronounce it. He got a four-year contract. And are you familiar with him?
I am. I believe he started out with Montreal and had performed well in Anaheim. He's a big, strong, raw-boned kid who plays the fourth line, can fight. He's one of the better fighters, I think, in the league. And I think in the time that he's been in Minnesota, his last stop, he was very effective on one of their best lines. Minnesota was a team that didn't have a lot of natural skill outside of Kaprizov and Zuccarello on their top line. They had to really grind it out, and I think that Deslauriers played really well with Marcus Foligno and fella Jordan Greenlaw, I think, was the other guy on the line. And so Deslauriers can score a few goals. If you get 10 goals from him and, you know, he hits 100 penalty minutes and is standing up for smaller teammates. And I think the Flyers really feel like, they need to regain their identity. You guys are familiar
right.
with that in terms
Absolutely.
Of not necessarily the Broad Street Bullies, but you've got to play a more crowd-pleasing physical style. And they've got, you know, skilled guys who just have to mature in Konechny and the defenseman. You know, they've got there, they've had for a little while, the Russian defenseman, I'm trying to think of his name, Provorov, or and you know, those guys are, they need to be protected. And now you've got maybe some guys who are going to work around him, and they can just concentrate on leading this team skill wise. So I think that probably prudent moves. Not sure what the cap situation the Flyers were facing going in, but I think they needed some fresh blood in the organization on the ice. Obviously, with John Tortorella behind the bench, they're going to have a fresh look there.
The Rangers were saying today in the New York Post they think they could lose as many as 6 players, and to the you know, obviously becoming free agents. But I want to go back a minute. We have a tendency to jump over things. Roger made a very big point there. That they signed a double contract. Most people don't understand what a double contract is in the National Hockey League. So, Rick, maybe you would explain, because if you're not a real hockey fan, you don't know how you can sign a double contract.
You mean a two-way contract?
Right.
Yeah, that means that you get a certain salary if you're playing in the American Hockey League, probably in the neighborhood of $100,000, $150,000, and then there's going to be a much bigger salary when you get called up to the NHL, probably in the neighborhood. You know, those guys have probably signed for $750,000, $800,000, that type of thing.
And the organization has the opportunity to send you back down or bring you back up at their option.
In most cases, it depends on how many years of service the guy has. If he's got 3 years of service, then to send him down, you'd have to put him on waivers, you know, and any team could claim him. But if they, you know, we really haven't seen a whole lot of guys get picked off of waivers. So if he clears waivers, he can be sent down. You know, if he's younger than that, the first or second year or something like that, then he can be sent down and called up as many times as a team needs him.
Rick Beckham, our special guest tonight. We're talking about the National Hockey League, talking about the free agents today at noontime. A lot of activity in the National Hockey League up and down, from the you know, Stanley Cup champions right on down to the bottom of the list. So, Roger, go to it.
Yeah, Don, and Rick, I just got a bulletin from the NHL that the Hurricanes have acquired from Las Vegas, forward Max Pacioretty, and also Dylan Coughlin, and from the Golden Knights in exchange for future considerations. And I know Pacioretty, 33, he had 19 goals, 18 assists, 37 points in 39 games last year. And I think that is a good move for the Hurricanes. And, you know, what do you think about that one, Rick?
I think it makes them a lot more dangerous team, because earlier in the day they acquired Brent Burns, who, even though he's 37 years old, he has been one of the very best defensemen of his generation through the time he's been in the NHL since, you know, the early 2000s. He was a 2003 draft. So they traded for him to basically run their power play and fit in on a very deep group of defensemen. And now you add a proven goal scorer in Max Pacioretty, who the only issue that Pacioretty's got is that he's been battling injuries the last 2 or 3 years. It's really limited his effectiveness, but he definitely, you know, will add some firepower to that lineup. And I think they really needed that. I mean, they've got a great coach in Rod Brind'Amour. They've got some terrific young talent, but they don't have any game breakers of the type that, you know, a Kucherov or a Hedman or a Stamkos, you know, real feature guys that you build around. And, you know, Pacioretty and Burns certainly are in the back nine of their careers, but they can add some skill and goal scoring, help the power play in some real skill areas, which I think they needed. So I think they did very well.
Rick, the Knights sort of hit their first real bump in the road. You know, they came out of nowhere as an expansion club and you know, just kept winning and winning and winning. And the sport has become such a dominant factor in Las Vegas. And this year they had to make a coaching change. They're starting to change personnel. First bump in the road for them.
Yeah, it was a tough season. They didn't have any luck with injuries, and certainly in goaltending, they were very inconsistent. Since Marc-Andre Fleury really had the big years to start off the franchise,
right?
You know, they've been iffy in goal. I mean, Robin Leonard hasn't gotten the job done, and they really haven't found any consistency there. And I think the team really draws a tremendous amount of confidence from that, and the Lightning are a great example of it. But when you've got that kind of top-level goaltending. But, yeah, they've got to figure things out here, and it's a big year because Bill Foley, their owner, he's not a real patient guy, and I think that he's shown that with a couple of coaching changes here with Gallant and DeBoer. Now you got Bruce Cassidy in there, is going to, I think, try to make them a little bit more solid defensively. We'll see what they can do offensively and in changing their style a little bit, but it's going to be interesting to see where the Golden Knights go from here.
Roger?
Yeah, that's a good point because they did get off to that great start from the beginning, but, you know, things have a way of leveling off over time one way or another. Or it can be go up, it can go down, or be level, I guess. You know, Rick, if you don't mind, we were talking about Rob Gronkowski definitely going to retire. You know, there, because you're right there in Tampa. What do you think about the Bucks this year with Brady? Do you think that they'll have another outstanding season, or you think they might have some bumps in the road?
Well, I think they're running into some of the problems that these hockey teams were trying to solve today in terms of free agent signings and trying to fit things under the cap. And, you know, the Bucks had a tremendous roster there. And I think a big question is the offensive line. Who's left? Who can get the job done? I think Brady's really going to miss Gronk, as I think the media will as well. But, you know, how many of those guys who were part of that team that won the Super Bowl a couple of years ago. It was a veteran team. How much do they have left? The guys who've been replaced, you know, will they have that same continuity? It was great last year that they could bring so many guys back from the championship team. But, you know, now they've had to say goodbye to a few people. And that, I think, brings up the question mark of how this all fits together for them. So, I think it brings them a little bit back down to earth, and we'll kind of see where things go from here with the Bucks. But, you know, the NFL's ultra-competitive, and the NHL's pretty much that same way, as we've seen.
Greg, my call's ready to go, but before we jump off with you, the Open, as we call it now, no longer the British Open, the Open, I'm going to give you a chance to give us the winner so we know what to do.
Well, I'm a big Will Zalatoris fan, and he's come so close. I mean, he's a guy without a win on the tour, and he's come so close to actually having three major championships.
Three strokes.
Yeah.
He's been knocked out by three strokes.
Yep, so I think maybe he can be the guy. I'm not sure how his game stacks up in this particular challenge with St. Andrews, but, you know, Morikawa pulled it off in winning over there in the UK, and obviously a different golf course in Kent, but I'm going to go with Zalatoris myself.
Well, Rick, we'll say thank you very much, and after this all starts to flow out, all the players that have been made available today at noontime with free agency and so forth. We'll get together with you, and you can sort of evaluate how you think everybody made out.
Yeah, that'll be interesting when the smoke clears. I just noticed I've been a little bit away from the internet for a few hours, so I noticed Johnny Gaudreau signed with Columbus. So that was a huge thing that people were waiting for. So, yeah, still a long way to go in terms of waiting for all the smoke to clear and see who won and lost.
Well, thank you very, very much. We'll get you in the next couple of weeks, and we'll clear the smoke out.
All right. So
looking
good,
forward
guys.
To
Take
it,
care.
Rick. Thank you.
Enjoy the Open.
Thanks, Rick.
Take care.
All okay. right. Mike Cole is ready for it. We'll have a chance to chat with him. He's director of golf. And we'll have a chance to chat a little bit about the Open and some of the players. Rock Manners Country Club. And first of all, Mike, thank you very much for joining us. And some of your observations on, there's been so much written over the last 48 hours and beyond about the course, that it's much different than it's ever been before, that the wind is going to be much different than it's ever been in any pre-air tournament, that there are seven par four holes that can be reached with a driver. Some of your observation from a professional standpoint.
Well, thank you first for having me on. It's always a pleasure. And it's certainly going to be a very interesting tournament. The thing about St. Andrews is, yes, some of these guys can now drive a number of the greens, or they're going to be hitting little flip wedges into them. But if you don't hit the exact right spot on those greens, it's still going to be pretty puttable. It's not going to be, just a gimme birdie or eagle by any chance.
Right.
They might drive a green and find themselves with, 100-foot putt that, they walk off with par.
Roger?
Yeah, I am not the golfer that you fellas are, and I admit it. It's not my personality. But do you think is that an ego thing about the Open? Just now, the Open, I know I was watching the Scottish Open over the weekend. I think that's a little airy, if you know what I mean, by the British.
Well, if any tournament deserves some little special recognition, it would probably be the British Open, to call it the Open. I would liken it to, you're talking about great golfers, and all you have to do is say Arnie or Jack, you know who you're talking about. So they've kind of reached that special acclaim or special recognition, and I think there's certainly a special mystique, especially going back to St. Andrews. But as far as calling it the Open, it sounds a little I'm not sure the
uppity.
Right word. Yeah, okay, yeah, I was going to say a little stuffy, but yeah, uppity. But unfortunately, that's what golf has been in the past. It certainly has changed quite a bit. We were talking just recently in my course that, now it's commonplace to see a foursome teeing off, and they got their earbuds in, and they got the music going in the cart, and it's more of a social event than when everything was so quiet and reserved.
Mike, I don't know if you had a chance to see the dedication yesterday with Jack Nicklaus. Only three players have been fortunate enough to find themselves as citizens of St. Andrews. And you talk about a ceremony that really, it was unbelievable to watch. It was unbelievable to listen to Jack Nicklaus's presentation and to all the people around him. It was just, to me, one of the great moments in golf that wasn't actually golf, but surrounded by the Open.
Yeah, I only got to see a little highlight of it. Jack, when he speaks, it's always with class and dignity. And,
oh, unbelievable.
I had, as Frank knows, I had the incredible good fortune as a young assistant pro to work at Lost Tree Club where Jack lives. And he was still on tour at the time. We're talking like 1979, 1980. And, on a very regular basis, got to stand there, 5, 10 feet from him watching him hit balls and talking to him while he was hitting balls. And he was just the epitome of class, always.
It was the epitome of class, absolutely, yesterday. Roger, go to it.
No, there's no doubt about that. And when you mention Arnie and Jack, you're exactly right, Mike. You know who you were talking about. And I just, you know, just following it as a fan, watching it, not as a player like you and Don, I think it's a shame that we don't have. I mean, we have name recognition, Tiger, et cetera, but I don't think that there's the name recognition as far as the average fan is concerned, like you did years ago with those two and Gary Player and Lou Trevino and people like that.
I agree with you 100%. I've had discussions with people before where, you know, the Jack and Tiger debate, who was the greatest of all time. And my point has always been that although each of them dominated their time in golf equally, I will say, I think Jack did it against a stronger field of players.
Correct.
You just named, you know, just, you know, a handful of them. But, you know, Jack, when you look back at who Jack dominated over, they were Hall of Fame players, you know.
Right.
You know, the Arnies and the, you know, Gary Players, Lee Trevinos, Billy Casper, Johnny Miller. I mean, you can just go on and on. They were all tremendously great players. And Tiger, although he dominated, you know, as much as Jack did in his time, who do you name? You could probably run out of fingers on one hand. You know, Mickelson. I don't know, Ernie Els. Most of the players that Tiger dominated over, in my opinion, would be in the second tier of players in Jack's day.
Mm-hmm. How about
my next question, G, is this. I personally felt great. I'm not a great Tiger Woods. I think he's the greatest golfer playing today, no question about that. And I wish him all the luck in the world, but I'm not a great Tiger fan to say. But I thought it was terrific yesterday the way he handled the questions. And I thought he and Rory McIlroy stepped right up to the plate and hit a line drive right through the middle. I mean, they were right there all the way, every comment that they made. Your comments, Mike.
I agree with both of them. Now, I didn't see all of Rory's. I saw a little bit of Tiger's. Actually saw a couple of comments from Rory, and saw a little bit in the Wilmington paper this morning. I'm assuming you're referring to the LIV.
Right.
Yeah, and that was my opinion on it right from the start. I mean it's hard for me to say that I would, you know, turn away from a guaranteed $200 million contract. Not that anybody's offering it to me, but, it's hard for me to say, well, now why would they, you know, why would they accept that? But my gut feeling.
Let me interrupt for a minute, because the point that Tiger made, which I thought was right on target, was this is not like other sports. You're not signing a contract before you play.
Right.
You're signing a check when you get it. And as Tiger pointed out, what you're doing is you're giving these people all this money. What's the incentive to practice? What's the incentive to play? What's the incentive to win? You don't need any. And you know, it's one thing with Mickelson, and we talked about this a few weeks ago on the show. You know, Mickelson's at the end of the line. He's 52 years old. Giving him $200,000, is a home run because he's not going to win any more money on the tour. So, you know, what are you getting by getting Mickelson to sign up and play?
Yeah, and my take on it was right from the beginning, isn't there some form of loyalty? And, you know, and I grew up in a different generation, but isn't there some...
So did we, Mike.
All of us did.
Right. You know, isn't there some feeling of loyalty to the fans, the tour itself, and the sponsors who put you where you are?
Well, that's what Tiger had to say. That's exactly what he said, that he was right on. And I mean, he doesn't really very often that I can think of come out and, you know, step to the plate. But he did here. He went and same thing with Greg Norman. He talked about he played with Greg Norman. Greg Norman was an outstanding player, but he tried to turn his back on the PGA 15 years ago, and now he's doing it again, and it's not right. Simple as that.
Right.
Yeah, you know, I mean, Mike, we were talking about this in another sense in baseball early on with Roy Cummings. And I just want to bring it up for a minute, then we'll continue. JT Realmuto of the Phillies, and among mm-hmm. others, is not vaccinated. So he cannot play when the Phillies are playing in Toronto. And he comes out and makes a statement that so what is it? I lose a couple of days' pay. $230,000. Well, to the average fan, $230,000 they may not make in 5, 6, 7 years. Who knows? Okay.
Right.
And to make a statement like that, and you know, which a lot of the golfers have made about this tournament, you know, this new tournament, and with all the money, as you alluded to. But I think I agree with Don. I think that was a great statement to hit it right on, head on, and, you know, not beat around the bush by the Tiger did. And because that's what you really have to look at, the loyalty, okay? The guys that are getting millions of dollars in any of these sports, but they don't get vaccinated. So when they have to go, like, out to Toronto or whatever, they can't play. And they can't play – some guys can't play in New York, okay, because of it. But there's no loyalty in professional sports, in my opinion, today.
No, I actually saw the comment about Realmuto today and, again, the Wilmington paper this morning where saying what you said about, so what if I give up, you know, a few days' pay? And he kind of followed it up with, my teammates know how much I care for them. Well, that's easy to say, but you're putting your whole team at their record in jeopardy.
Right.
So you can say, my teammates know I love them. Well, then go get vaccinated. You know,
right.
You're hurting your team, bottom line.
Just let me jump in for a second to update Roger because I'm watching the game. He can't see it in Atlanta. I can see it down here at the Jersey Shore. It's now 6-0 Toronto, and Wheeler is
and it's a one hitter
long gone.
Pitcher
so
Toronto. One hitter.
So far.
Wow.
Yes. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, guys, the other thing I wanted to bring up, Mike has a camp for kids that he teaches yearly. And, Mike, I know you have your camp going on either now or very shortly. Can you let our listeners know, especially those in the Wilmington and southern Delaware County areas, that, what you've got available and when it is available?
Certainly. Thank you. It's PGA Junior Golf Camps, and the camps run through August. I think the last camp begins I think it's maybe the 15th of August, whatever that Monday is. And they come to us for a week during the day. They're not an overnight camp. And we have half-day sessions and full-day sessions. So the half-dayers arrive at 8:45 and they're with us till noon. We cover all aspects of the game. And then if they are full-dayers, they have lunch and then go out onto the golf course. So we do this. We have eight camps. We're into our third week. So we have eight camps. So there's five more camps remaining. And we take a maximum of 16 campers each week. But it's a great time. Kids have fun. We tell them right in the beginning that we have three objectives, and that's to have a lot of fun, learn how to be better golfers, and to stay safe. Without the third one, the first two happen. So,
are these first-time starters, or are these youngsters that have been playing, but are trying to improve and learn through your system?
It is a combination. So we work with each camper at their individual pace and talent level. And we have, two coaches working with them each day. But it is, there are some players that are, like 13 to 17, they'll be full dayers if they've got a little experience. So they go out on the golf course in the afternoon, or the younger and less experienced players are just half-day campers.
Mike, how long would it take? Like my son has two boys and a girl. The oldest is going to be going into high school. They live in Ridley. Okay, how long is the trip to your course from Ridley?
From Ridley,
20 minutes.
I'm trying to think here. Yeah, that's
20 minutes, right? Yeah, 95.
Right, it's straight 40, shot down 95.
20 minutes? 20 minutes?
Yeah.
That's about right.
Oh,
yeah.
Great. Okay.
Yeah,
there you go, Roger. Send those kids right to the camp.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, my daughter-in-law was telling the younger son, who's going to be, I think, in seventh grade, that you got to do something. So he's playing soccer right now. They're on in the Caribbean, the whole family on a nice cruise. So, but when they get back next week, I will definitely bring it up. Okay, because that would get, and the daughter, the youngest, she would just take right over, because her personality is that way. She's a performer.
great. Yeah,
Roger,
the registration is done online. Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
That's okay. I was just saying I was kind of upset when they were talking about the famous names in golf that my name wasn't brought up, because I was pretty well known in Delaware County. As a matter of fact, I can't play at any. They see me play golf, and I can't play at any damn course up there.
That's me too, Frank.
Well, Mike, it's nice to see the kids grow. I know you've been doing this for a number of years, and so you must be able to take a look at kids that joined your camp, say, 6 years ago, who were 12, 13 years old, and where they are now at 18 to 20, and how they've grown and how they've stayed with the game of golf. It's got to be pretty rewarding.
It is extremely rewarding, and somebody asked me just recently when I was going to retire, and I said, why would I do that? I'm doing exactly what I love to do, and to see things like that, yes, are quite rewarding. Yeah.
Well, Mike, thank you so much for joining us, and I know Frank gets in touch with you every now and then, and you want to talk a little bit more about the camps and things that are happening there in your area? Well, I'd love to have you join us. Thank you very much.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Mike Zimzak, ready to go.
Good luck.
Mike Zimzak, ready to go. We touched momentarily on Dan Snyder and the fact that he's going to finally make a statement, or he's going to be interviewed and he's going to go under cross-examination. Mike, you're in the Washington area. I only see the periphery of it. What's it look like?
Well, right now it seems as though, based on the reports in the Wall Street Journal and on talk radio today, that he is camped out on his yacht someplace off the coast of France, trying to dodge the subpoena from the House Oversight Committee. No, I'm really not making this up. I know it sounds like a sitcom, but that's honestly what's going on, because he refuses to testify under subpoena. So he has agreed to testify via video conference on June 28th. Now, you know, I don't know. I've been over to Europe. I know that they have, like, different plugs and the current runs at the same time, and the Internet's a little bit different over there. So, you know, I don't know what the chances are. He plugs his computer in the video conference with the House Oversight Committee, and it blows up or something like that. So the latest we have is he is overseas, claiming that he is on business and will not be available to testify in person. So he can only be available via video conference.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's all set up as a video conference.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mike, the only reason I was laughing, because Don would know this, so would Frank. The Buddy Ryan, when Don was hosting the Buddy Ryan show with Buddy, he would always address Norman Brayman, the owner, as the guy in France, because he had a place in the south of France. Isn't that right, Don?
That's exactly right.
No, I mean,
that's where he was.
That's where he was, exactly. Yeah.
It does have shades of that. You know, I was saying earlier to somebody, I think it's a cross between Norm Brayman and Thurston Howell III from Gilligan's Island.
Well, how about things on your front burner on the soccer front? Because a lot of things are happening on the soccer front, so let's touch on that a little bit.
All right, so where do we start? Right now,
start in Germany.
Start in Germany. Well, actually, in England, the UEFA Women's European Championships are going over in England right now.
Right.
We're about halfway through the group stages. You can catch those games. They are at 12:00 and 3:00 on ESPN. I'm not gonna lie; it's actually been a pretty interesting tournament. There's been a few draws and a lot of just blowouts, but what we've seen is probably the six best teams, those six best women's teams in Europe emerge as the favorites. I would have to say after their 2-0 win over Spain yesterday, Germany, who have scored 6 in 2 games but conceded none, are really, really looking good. But England also the other day beat Norway, who I thought would be maybe not amongst the favorites, but a really competitive team. They beat them 8-0. That's a tournament record for number of goals scored and winning margins. So, absolutely, after coming out in the first game and kind of laying an egg, even though they got a 1-0 victory over Austria, England just showed up and played lights out. So France will be in action tomorrow. They beat Italy on Sunday 5-1, and I think that's a really dangerous team. France had never won, despite being one of the best women's teams in the world. They're ranked number 3 behind the USA and Sweden right now. They are home to the women's champions, the women's Champions League final winner, Lyon, one of the best women's teams in European history. They've actually never won a knockout stage game in the Euros, and they've never won a tournament. You know, they were amongst the favorites to win the World Cup when it was hosted in France in 2019. The only problem was the draw wasn't favorable to them, and they ended up meeting the U.S. women in the first knockout stage game, or in the quarterfinals, I'm sorry. They met the U.S. women in the quarterfinals and lost. And so I'm going to be very interested to see how they perform, if they can finally get over the hump. Germany have won this tournament. They've competed in this tournament 12 times. Germany has won it 8. So they're really looking strong. England are playing on home soil. They're a really good team. So that's the tournament that bears watching over the next couple of weeks. On this side of the ocean, the U.S. women are in action tomorrow against Costa Rica in the CONCACAF W Championship, the women's championship for this region. They already qualified based on their 5-0 victory over Jamaica about a week ago for the World Cup. So they'll go back to the World Cup next year in New Zealand and Australia to defend. They're the 2-time defending champions. They beat Mexico on Sunday. It wasn't a great game. It was 1-0 on a very, very late Kristen Mewes goal. But the U.S. have a very interesting streak going on. They have not allowed a goal in this tournament since the Roosevelt administration. And I'm not talking about Franklin. I'm talking about Teddy. It's been about that long since they've conceded a goal. They just keep running up the shutouts. So it'll be interesting to see if they can shut out Costa Rica and then set up a match for the finals and an automatic qualifying berth to the Olympics in Paris against Canada, who are their closest rivals in North America.
Roger?
Well, I wanted to bring up to date the Atlanta United are up over Salt Lake City 2-1, 57-21. And I'm looking to see, I guess that's in the first half. But I'll tell you, the United made a couple of moves in the last few days. Mike probably saw that. But, you know, this looks like a really good game I'm watching tonight.
Yeah, Atlanta United has been really struggling. They've only won 2 games since April. And it was really interesting. Over the weekend, after a loss, Joseph Martinez, who was one of their original marquee signings, their record goal scorer, he has the record for goals scored in a MLS season. He's kind of like the talisman for that club. He really came out and laid in to the players talking about how, and the front office, talking about how the players needed to step up, that they didn't care, that the front office needed to get a better, do a better job of recruiting players who are willing to play for the crest on the front of the shirt, not the name on the back. He said, you know, we need to get players in here who are invested in being here, alluding to the fact that he feels like some of their marquee signings have come over and they've looked at this time as an opportunity to go someplace else, and they're not as invested as they should be. The coach came out later and kind of tried to walk that back, but it was very interesting to hear his words. He's clearly frustrated, and he even alluded to the fact that he may leave in free agency after the 2023 season.
Because he's so upset with the spirit of the teammates, you know, and not doing the job.
They've been through.
Mike, let me ask you this, because we talked a great deal at the first part of the show because the Phillies are up in Canada right now. And the bugaboo about whether you get your shots or you don't get your shots. And, of course, a couple of key Phillies did not get their shots and are not participating and trying to, you know, win themselves a postseason berth and really struggling. Has soccer got this problem with the number of countries you go to, and do some countries make sure that you have your shots, or can you get in and play if you don't have your shots?
It really is a country-by-country thing. Most of the European countries are under the EU, which has different restrictions on being able to play. So we have not seen that as much in European soccer as we might in athletics over here. Now, of course, that's going to be an MLS thing because you have teams in Canada. In fact, you have three of them in Montreal, Vancouver, and Toronto. So athletes here who want to go up to Canada and play, if they're not vaccinated, they can't go. We know that, you know, had a tournament, and tournaments have not been scheduled in Canada for that reason. And it bears watching how that's going to continue to play out. You know, I know that it's still, what, 4 years away, but with the vaccine requirement, if the Canadians don't change that, you know, how will that impact something like the World Cup, where you have international teams who are going to be playing up there? And, you know, what will happen if the vaccine requirement is there and you have athletes from Africa, from Asia, from parts of Eastern Europe who may not be vaccinated and wanting to go up there and play? You know, COVID has been a thing in soccer. We saw a number of games throughout the various European leagues this year that had to be canceled as a result of, you know, COVID outbreaks amongst teams. But the vaccine requirements are different, and so they've relied a lot more on what we've seen as a lot more issues with testing more so than the vaccine requirements.
Well, Mike, always good to talk with you. Great information, as always. And we'll get together again next week. Thank you very, very much. Doug sitting in the wings there waiting to go. Mm-hmm. And we'll get to him. Go ahead. Thank you very much.
Mike, make sure you congratulate Doug, because the Baltimore Orioles are actually at 500 right now. They've won 9
Looking
straight.
Good.
They're up 4-0 over the Cubs.
That was going to be my first question with Doug. Was not necessarily, even though he is our PGA professional, even though the Open is going on starting tomorrow morning over there at St. Andrews, my top story here tonight was the Baltimore Orioles and their winning streak.
Yeah.
Doug,
that's right.
What do you think?
Well, I witnessed their win firsthand last night in Chicago. My wife and I flew to Chicago for a couple days. I was stationed in Wrigley Field. I had my first ever Chicago dog, you know, which was delicious. So we watched them get to 500, and here we are back tonight and winning 4-0 currently, I think. So, you know, it's if you really think about it, they have 44 wins. They had 52 all of last season. So I think that the over-under on amount of wins for the season for them, if you would have taken the bet, was 62. I think that there were a lot of you know, baseball media guys, Buster Olney and some of those guys that just, you know, were relentless on how bad the Orioles were and those sorts of things. And, you know, they're fun to watch. They're obviously trending in the right direction. I mean, if you look at some of the all-stars that were picked, we had this discussion last night at Wrigley. Contreras for the Cubs and Ian Happ for the Cubs. They had two representatives. And I know that they're the National League, but the Orioles probably have 5 or 6 players that are better than both of those guys that weren't even considered. You know, so that tells you how weak I think the National League actually is. And I watched Jorge Lopez. Well, let's go backwards. So Jordan Lyles threw 7 innings last night. Looked pretty good, and that's what he's there to do, is to eat innings and mentor some of these younger guys. But they brought in Cionel Perez, left-hander, and from where I was sitting, from the time the ball left his hand to the time it got to home plate, if you blinked, you missed it. I mean, he was throwing 98, 99 miles an hour from the stretch position as the setup guy in the eighth. And then they brought in Jorge Lopez, who's a lone representative for the Orioles in the All-Star game. I mean, his stuff is so electric when he gets a day or two of rest. He was throwing 97, 98, 99 miles an hour, and he was changing speeds back to a slider that was throwing about 83 miles an hour. So, I mean, just nasty, filthy stuff. So if you look, as I had this conversation with a lot of the Cubs fans, which were – I hate to say it, but the Cubs fans were really nice people. We encountered a lot of really, really nice people in Chicago. And if you look at the Orioles team, a lot of those guys are cast-offs. They're Rule 5ers. They're waiver wire ads. I mean, Perez, C&L Perez was one of them. You know, Mateo was one of them.
Midwesterners. Midwesterners are altogether different.
Well, I'm used to dealing with people from Maryland who aren't generally very nice. So it was a shock to me to actually go somewhere and have people, you know, be nice to you and talk to you and not, you know what I mean? Just, it was different. It was way different. So it was a blast. We had a blast. I mean, I'm a little bit tired from a couple days and you know, just a quick trip out and back and some flights and those sorts of things. But it's all good. We had a wonderful time.
Roger?
Well, I'll tell you, Doug, I'm an Orioles fan again. I was for many years spending a lot of time, you know, in D.C. and NSA for reserves and for work. And I'll tell you, I'm watching a lot of highlights. I've still got an Orioles cap. I'm going to start wearing it because I'll tell you, the Phillies are wearing thin on me. And the Braves are, I have my Braves cap, so.
Well, I'll tell you, the other interesting portion of this is, you know, Don, you and I have talked about whether the Orioles are going to be buyers or sellers or how aggressive they're going to be at the trade deadline. And we don't know the answers to that. Obviously, we're going to have to wait and see. But on a more positive spin, I mean, I think after a player reaches 130 major league at-bats, he no longer becomes a quote-unquote prospect. So Adley Rutschman was dropped from the top 100 prospect list because he's, you know, surpassed that number. However, the new list that came out still holds, I think, six Orioles in the top 100. In addition, you know, they have five of the top 81 picks in whatever this weekend's Sunday's draft. You know, in addition, they have, you know, other people at the double A, triple A levels who aren't necessarily in that top 100, but are, you know, wonderfully good prospects. So, you know, there's
well, the last time we talked, you made a key point. You said, I hope, you know, they don't do something disruptive. That was before they won, you know, all these games and went over 500 if they win again tonight. Mm-hmm. And you were very adamant in your position that, hey, let's don't disrupt this team because it's now just getting to a point where they're working so well together and playing so well together, so we'll see what happens.
Well, they suffered for a long time to get to this spot. I mean, you know, for years we were making fun of them.
For sure. Well, people were, and that was my opening statement, you know, that to a lot of these individuals that had taken their shots at the Orioles over the year, those are the ones I don't want them back on the bandwagon. They can go bury their heads in the sand and do something else because as an Oriole fan, you know, my dad watches every stinking Oriole game, and for him to endure like three seasons of over 100 losses, I mean, you know, it's very frustrating. They had a lot of really like 4A type players. They weren't really even major leaguers. I mean,
and
the Orioles haven't even spent any money yet in free agency. You know, so, I mean, I think the highest paid player on their team is Jordan Lyles, who signed a one-year deal for $7 million. So, I mean, let's not rule out the money they're still paying Chris Davis, but, I mean, I'm talking about players that play. So there's a lot of optimism, I think, if you're, you know, interested in getting your Orioles baseball cap back out of the closet and dusting that thing off. I think there's a lot to be excited about. I mean, there's definitely, when you watch, especially at Camden Yards, there's a definitive vibe that you feel.
Yeah, there
that
is.
I feel.
You're right.
And, you know, to watch them come back in those couple games that they had those comebacks. And Kevin Brown does a wonderful job, I think, of calling the games and adding to the excitement. And it's super exciting to be an Oriole fan for me. And I know this, obviously, this year. I mean, they're right now, two games out of the wild card. Is that going to continue? Probably not. They still have to play a very difficult AL East schedule, which is the most difficult division in baseball. But at the same time,
let me interrupt for a second just to give Roger a little encouragement. Scott just hit a home run, two-run home run, and the Phillies are now only down 6-2. Go ahead, Doug.
Yeah. I mean, you know, so at the end of the day, I mean, if the Orioles win 70 plus games, you know, that's a heck of a leap forward in a win. So,
oh yeah.
Well, you know, Doug, years ago when I'd be at a lot of games, and this is pre Camden Yards at Memorial Stadium, and broadcast
33rd Street.
Yeah, exactly. Had the Catholic school right across the street. And but I can remember, I thought it was a great broadcast team, Mel Proctor and John Lowenstein. And then there was also Jim Carvelis, you know, who did baseball and also the Bullets when they were in Baltimore. And and I know, Don, I know you knew Jim Carvelis for years, you know, back in the day. But that was all on HTS, on Home Team Sports.
Yeah.
And I just think they did it. Yeah, you remember that. I mean, I know you were young. But, you know, I was watching the Orioles the other night on MLB Network, but it was Masson that was doing the games. And and they did it. I thought they did a great job because some of these teams that we don't see that often, I don't think the broadcasters do a good job at all. And you know, and I do think Chip Carey does a great job. I think his analysts, and unless you're Frenchy, I think they're awful. I really do. I mean, Peter Moylan, I can't understand, and he's Australian, and he talks English, but I don't understand him.
Well, I think the Orioles do a really good job of rotating, you know, the other guy, which. It goes from Ben McDonald, who's really grown on me, and I think he adds a country boy flavor to you know the baseball game. Obviously, very knowledgeable. Mike Bordick, who I love, his points of view. You know, I think Jim Palmer's probably the worst one for me. He's a little dry and a little I don't know what you'd call it on the arrogant side, maybe. But Kevin Brown, I think, does a wonderful job. So it's exciting to watch the team. It's exciting to listen to them. I listen if I'm in the car. I always listen to the game. You know, my wife and I watch. I mean, she's a Nats fan, but she's you know the Nats are god awful. But she's been watching a lot of this unfold with
say,
the Orioles.
She's in the same boat that people were in Baltimore for the last
year. That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you know, listen. I had to listen to the. The Nats winning the World Series and the parade and all that crap, you know. So, I mean, you know, it all takes its time.
Hey, let's get to golf a bit because we got a PGA professional here. And we got the Open going on starting tomorrow morning early. Some of your observations, some of the people that you you think are going to be in the hunt. And also, what do you think about the course? We talked earlier in the show. And they keep emphasizing the seven holes out of the 18 that on this particular course, with as dry as it is and no wind, they can reach every one of these greens with their drive and what the low scores are going to be. Your observation.
I think that always makes for a fun championship when they have holes that are, I don't know if you'd say risk-reward, but drivable or you know, they play certainly different. You know, I think that... you know, the old course is an iconic place that, was it Bobby Jones that said your resume is not complete until you win a British Open at the old course. So, I mean, they've, you know, Tiger's won it there twice. I mean, it's a wonderful venue. It's great. I mean, I love getting up early to watch the British Open. I think it's... especially when you're talking about us typically being under the cover of 90 and hazy, hot, humid here, and they're typically wearing stocking caps or sweaters or something, I think is a really cool thing to see the
difference.
No wind
this year, they say. It's going to be 4 days with no wind.
Yeah, that's odd. So, yeah, you might see some lower scores, and I think that it's interesting to note. I mean, I know that Tiger loves playing there, and you know, we've talked about his injuries and inability to play a full schedule, you know, in as much as to say that him walking four rounds of golf is very difficult at this point in time. So he believes he's ready. I think he wouldn't be there otherwise. you know, I think the tournaments that lead up to this event, a lot of the guys from the American Tour like to play the Scottish Open the week before in an effort to, you know, figure out some of these link style concepts. So you had Xander Schauffele who won last week, who, you know, I think is obviously playing well, and you can't discount him. I think that you can never go wrong with Scottie Scheffler, who seems to be in the mix every week. You know, Tommy Fleetwood always seems to be somewhere near the finish line. You know, I think there's, I mean, John Rahm, I mean, you can, there's a lot of, I mean, this is a major. You've got a lot of really good players that are playing in this event. And,
how about Rory? I think Rory, because it's been a long time since he's won a major, what, 7 years? And they're putting a lot of stock in because he's playing very well at the moment.
Yeah, I think listening to him in his interviews, I think he's pretty confident in his ability right now and where he is with his game. And, you know, I mean, maybe it's his time again. I don't know. I mean, he's, you know, it's like how many years ago was it that Sergio Garcia was, you know, an up-and-coming prodigy that was going to be, you know, battling Tiger Woods week in and week out. And now all of a sudden he's nearly, what, 40 years old. So
that's right.
You know, you look at Rory McIlroy. I mean, time passes, you know, and – you know, Don, you and I have talked about this a number of times on this show about how competitive the game is and how many good players are playing every week and how you only have to string, you know, four, you know, potentially 3 to 4 rounds of golf together to hoist a trophy. So that's why it's so hard to predict these things because, you know, I mean, if you went sight unseen and said, you know what, you have to pick a – whatever, we'll call it a trifecta in this wagering. You'd have to pick Schauffele because he won last week. You'd have to pick Scheffler because he's the best player on the planet right now. And then, you know, who do you kind of muffle in there as your third pick? I don't know. I mean, you want to take a long shot in Tiger? You want to, you know,
I'd
do something different?
Jordan,
I mean,
Jordan Spieth's playing pretty well right now. His game's not in bad shape. I think he's got a shot.
I don't know. I don't know. I just Spieth to me is. I mean, he may be a top tenner, but I don't know that he has the guts to get a win here. I mean, he's fooled with his swing over the last couple of years, and I can't stand watching him with that stupid practice swing that he does. but he's. I don't know. He's just. He was to me a good representation of an American golfer. He at one point in time, I feel like he was doing and saying all the right things, but. You know, he's the kind of guy that hits a bad shot and blames it on his caddy. Like, I don't know. There's something about the guy I just don't like. And whatever.
Roger?
Yeah.
Well, you know, we were talking about it with Mike Cole earlier, Doug, about golf. And a point that I made was, and I think it's very true, and he agreed, name recognition of today's golfers – other than Tiger, we'll say, is not what it was in back what I call the heyday of golf. Arnie Palmer,
right.
Jack Nicklaus, okay, Lee
sure.
Trevino, Gary Player. You just don't have that. And I don't know whether it's because media is so spread out today with all these other networks and all these highlights. I don't know. But and then we also talked about the competitive tournament for, you know, Saudi Arabia, and Don brought up a good point that Tiger hit it right up front about not having your dedication to the PGA that
loyalty,
you should have your
loyalty
loyalty right.
Well, listen,
what about
I think
that, Doug?
To answer your first question, I think you have a much deeper and richer talent pool today than you've ever had in across the board in sports. I mean, look back through the annals of sports. I mean, UCLA won how many national championships? The Yankees won how many World Series? You know, you had teams that dominated for a number of years. And I'm not saying they weren't good teams. I'm just saying that the overall talent pool wasn't conducive to parity as it is now, where you look across the board to any sport you want to think of, you know, and, you know, whether they have a salary cap or they don't, it's very hard to be a dynasty in this day and age because of the parity that's involved. The the movement.
Well, you didn't
free
have
agency
free agency
and,
then either back then.
Right.
In the day. That was just,
seriously, I mean, who the hell was going to beat the Yankees? Who the hell was going to beat UCLA? Who was going to beat some of these teams? They had the same people every year. I mean, if you couldn't beat them last year, how the hell are you going to beat them this year? You know, I mean, I'm just saying, like, you look at teams now, and, I mean, look, we know that technology's played its role with these athletes and their training and their bigger, faster, stronger and all these things. I mean, we've talked about, you know, all this. Would Wilt Chamberlain be as dominant today as he was back then?
Absolutely.
We don't really know the answer. I don't know the answer
absolutely
to that question. I mean, you know, if Ray Lewis played, Doug, you never saw him,
I don't think. Okay,
well,
you might
listen,
have seen him late.
If Ray Lewis played for the Colts, he would have killed people. You know what I mean? Not that people that played for the Colts, you know, didn't, but, I mean, a linebacker of that day was 215 pounds. You know, so, I mean, the games have changed over time, and I think that's – I mean, how many guys – look, the Orioles can run five or six guys out of their bullpen that can throw north of 95 miles an hour. That wasn't the case back in the day, you know what I mean? When I mean, there were pitchers,
well,
obviously,
the case
that threw that
five, number 6 years ago, either.
We're talking 20 plus years ago, is what I'm saying.
No. I'm saying what you just said.
Let me just throw one point in. If you look at Wilt, excuse me. If you look at Wilt, he was an entity within himself. I mean, they had to change the rules. If Wilt were playing today, he'd still be a dominant or more dominant player than he was back then. They had to widen the lane. They had to do all kinds of things to try to neutralize Wilt Chamberlain, and he still holds, I think, like 63 NBA records.
You know, Don, if Wilt Chamberlain squared up against Joel Embiid, Shaquille O'Neal, I mean, some of these guys, I mean, what happens?
Oh, he would have taken them out. Wilt was one of the strongest people around. And wait a minute, Doug. Okay, you got me going on this now. Okay, Wilt Chamberlain went against great centers like Bill Russell, okay, and others. There were a lot of great centers that were as good or better than the centers that you have in the NBA today. Believe me.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I think that the players of that era probably played more defense than they obviously do now because it's become more of an offensive game. You know, there wasn't 1 second. I used to play one-on-one against my dad growing up, and there wasn't 1 second that he didn't have his hands somewhere checking me, pushing me, on me, whatever. So the game
right
changed over time to be less physical than it was then. So I don't think Wilt Chamberlain ran into the same, you know,
let me tell you something. You never saw Luskatov. I mean,
Jim Luskatov.
If these
and,
guys,
and who was the guy that played for the Lakers and then the and
Mikan?
Then for the Celtics? Who
was it George Mikan?
No, Mikan was great. No, this was later. But they were both, you know, they were nothing but like the Broad Street Bullies. They were fighters.
Right. You could never come down the lane with Luskatov. You know, and Russell, you didn't see.
Well,
now, let me go back to your point, because in all fairness, it's not the same game. The game we're looking at now is not basketball. It's a three-point shot game.
Yeah,
absolutely. You know, if there's any real contact, they complain. You know, they come down the floor, they shoot a 30-foot shot, and then they run down the other end and shoot another 30-foot shot. It's a totally, to me, uninteresting game now.
It is. I don't watch the NBA, so I'm not challenging your point of view. I'm just saying my point was, if you look at the talent pool today in its entirety, from A all the way through Z, I think that you're going to find that today's games, regardless of the sport, are, you know, more laden with talent from top to bottom than they were. I mean, you talk about Jack, you talk about Arnold, you talk about Trevino, you talk about Player. You know, I mean, they had a wonderful grouping of guys that could win on any given week, but in most cases, that rotated every week. You had five or six guys that could possibly win. you know, in today's game, you have 20, 30. I mean, how many 50, guys could possibly 50, win?
50.
Right. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's endless with somebody that could string together a couple good rounds of golf, and there you have it. So, you know, it's just crazy. I mean, the NFL, you know, it's very rare that you see a team, you know, get to the Super Bowl and win. You know, right now we have the Chiefs, who are, you know, kind of in that pseudo dynasty as far as what they've won and the times they've been there, et cetera, or the Tampa Bay, whatever. Tom
Frank,
Brady.
Frank tells me we're out of time. Doug, thank you very,
just
very
one,
much.
Just let me say one thing. Isn't the international? There are more international players today than there were back in that era.
For sure,
that's
the global. All sports are global. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Take care, Doug.
You got it, guys.
Wilt's number one, always will be.
Right on.
Take
Have
care,
great
Doug.
Week.
Look
God
forward works. To the Open tomorrow morning.
Of course.
Have a great week, Frank. You're the master.
Thanks, Rod. Ladies and gentlemen, these programs are brought to you each and every night of the week. In grateful appreciation to the men and women of the United States Armed Forces, the men and women of the Texas Fire Services. When you're out there and see somebody in uniform, please, please let them know that you know they're there. These are very tough times for men and women in uniform. These programs are dedicated to those who have lost their lives in the line of duty. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman Jeffrey Colcat, Patrolman Jeffrey Colcat-Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazowitz, Sergeant Thomas Batinger, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Randy Childers, San Diego Officer Mike Hendler, Sergeant Thomas Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Department, Patrol Officer Charlie Condit, Tarpon Springs Police Department, Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, Lieutenant Joyce Craig Lewis, Philadelphia Fire Department, Sergeant James O'Connor, Philadelphia Police Department, Sergeant Charles Lake, Hillsborough County Sheriff's Department, Patrol Officer Arnolfo Crispin, Lakeland PD, Lieutenant Joe Zerba, Newcastle County Police, Deputy Josh Meyer, Nassau County Sheriff's Department, Captain Matt Letourneau, Philadelphia Fire Department, Captain Chris Leach, Wilmington Fire Department, Lieutenant Artith Hope, Wilmington Fire Department, Lieutenant Jerry Ficus, Wilmington Fire Department, Trooper Joe Bullock, Florida Highway Patrol, Trooper Chelsea Richards, Florida Highway Patrol, Chief Al Hogle, Longboat Key Police Department, and Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department. My brothers and sisters, though, you may be 10-7 at this point in time, and sometime you'd be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the roads rise up to meet you. May the winds be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your fields, and the sun shine lightly on your face. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your family always in the palm of his hands. Good night, God bless, and have a great week.
Shem alech ma yilama, Shem ahezahil ma, Son Hashem evorat fed, Hakuig again ma yilama. Shem alech ma yilama, Shem fiery blade engaged to lead, he'd break the bravest in the field. away and proudly toast his noble fame. Who spirit and with mind aflame saw Esham's strength and length of days. Shame on him, my Elama.
County dispatched to 1999. All units be advised, 1999's responded to his last emergency. May God rest his soul.
Hey, Bob, we love you. We miss you.